Star Wars Action News presents Republic Forces Radio Network, bringing you coverage of Star Wars, The Clone Wars. Our host will review the toys, books, comics, games, and all things related to the Clone Wars animated series. And after each new episode airs on Cartoon Network, our host will recap and review the show. And we want to hear your thoughts on The Clone Wars. Call us at 415-508-JEDI every Saturday after a new episode, and your call may be played on the air.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Republic Forces Radio Network, where we review each episode of The Clone Wars animated series. I'm Jonathan, and today we are discussing Season 5, Episode 10, Secret Weapon. And joining me tonight is RFRN's own Secret Weapons, Jen.
Hey, everybody.
Jerry.
Hey, guys, it's Jerry.
And Nathan.
Oh, wait, sorry. Hey, everybody.
This is the start of a new arc that is very droid-centric. And why don't we go through the order and tell everybody what we thought of the episode. Jen?
Well, I thought it was pretty fun, actually. I like droids. They're probably one of my favorite parts of Star Wars. And David, my husband, absolutely loves the R2 units in general. So, like, we had a good time with this. It was kind of hokey, really over the top. Some of the gags kind of had me rolling my eyes. But overall, I thought it was kind of fun. I really hated, I know you're supposed to, but the little general guy, I can't remember his rank. Whack got to me. He irritated me, not because I was supposed to dislike him, just I hated him in general. Like, he just really annoyed the crud out of me. But for the most part, I thought this was a really fun episode. It was okay. It was a little kiddies, a little goofy, but it was all right. It was kind of tongue-in-cheek. I didn't mind it.
Yeah, Jen, I'm with you. I mean, it was fun, and there were certainly some humorous little moments. And you kind of put this show on the moral equivalent of, like, Star Wars Lego, to where it's intentionally supposed to be a little goofier than the saga typically is. But at the end of the day, the only thing I could say after the credits started rolling was just dumb, dumb, dumb. I mean, is this really an arc? This isn't a standalone show, these droids, because I know at C6 we at least saw some Star Tours like they're shooting through ice comets or something. Is this really a four-episode arc with these droids?
It is a four-episode arc, and Jerry, the sequence that you're referring to that we saw at C6 is actually next week.
Oh, I figured since it hit the hyperspace. Maybe the last couple episodes have something to do with what they do with that key, more so than just all droids all the time, but this show is just dumb.
And Nathan, what did you take of it?
You know, when it was over, I was thinking, meh, and my fiancé's comment was that it kind of sucked. Kind of stepping back and looking at it, this is the kind of episode that back in season one we would have been begging for. If they were going to do something that was a little cutesy and goofy and just sort of a humorous episode, they would have done it in this form. Because in this case, you know, yeah, it's a little bit over the top and whatnot, and the premise is a little bit odd, but nothing seems to totally fly in the face of rationality with the rest of the Clone Wars. It's not like, you know, Nomad Droids or something like that all over again. I mean, if this is as bad as the season gets, I think we're going to have a fairly solid season still. So, I don't know. I mean, it wasn't a great episode, but for what it did, I think it pulled it off well enough. Not a highlight by any means, but better than some of the other ones of this ilk that we've seen in previous seasons.
You know, Nathan, you called it out early, but I did think to myself that, yeah, I kind of think this is dumb, but I like Nomad Droids, so maybe I shouldn't get a vote.
Well, and I'm going to echo more of what Jen took of it. I did think it was kind of goofy. It's droids and a frog, essentially. And there was a little bit of sort of eye-rolling slapstick. But there was something fun about it. I don't really know why I enjoyed it. I can tell you that my boys loved it. But it wasn't too bad. And what's interesting is that this episode kind of takes us back to mainstream Clone Wars. The reason that they're going on this mission, the reason this episode occurs, because of a massive offensive by the Separatists. Let's step back to the very beginning of the episode with a different color logo. Did the blue logo throw anybody?
I was wondering about that. So that was not normal then. I meant to go back and check it. So the blue logo was new. I thought I was, like, hallucinating or something.
Yeah, red logos are for Darth Maul shows. Blue logos are for Astromechs. Did Young Jedi have a green one? I don't remember.
Young Jedi did have the standard one that we've seen. It didn't say Young Jedi as it did at C6. It still said Clone Wars, but it was the green.
Okay, so green is for the Padawans. You know, they got the same color coordinated, so you can choose to turn the show off, you know, within seconds.
One thing that happened initially was the fortune cookie. Humility is the only defense against humiliation. And I read that, and the first thing I thought is, wow, that's a little deep for a Saturday morning cartoon. It certainly flew over the kids' heads. But as I said, we're now back into the Clone Wars proper, Republic versus Separatists. The whole premise is that there is a secret transmission that's intercepted, and the Republic can't break it. So their idea is to steal a decoding chip. What do you think about this premise, guys?
Yeah, Jonathan, I appreciate the fact, because I'm the one that always says that, hey, give me something relevant, i.e. something that has to do with the greater story, the Clone Wars, et cetera, but the fact that there was a mission regarding General Grievous, regarding the Separatists, and there's a couple clones around the beginning was really just the excuse to do Three Stooges and the Astromechs. I mean, I'll get into the specifics as we go throughout the plot, but I will, you know, to be fair, I even though I say the show's dumb, 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 it's because I have some specific things to point out, and even though it's in the setting of the quote-unquote Clone Wars, it does it poorly.
Yeah, I don't know. I think for the premise, I think the premise worked out better than a lot of the droid-centric episodes that we've seen, whereas in this case, you know, they're being given an actual mission, and, you know, barring the whole what-if-they-run-into-Grievous type thing, although he apparently is able to be taken out by Gungans with Boomas, it begs that sort of, you know, what type of thing, what kind of trouble could they get into? You know, are they perhaps suited to this task? We've seen droids be able to move behind enemy lines before without necessarily being detected. You know, the idea of doing that, having the very small character riding essentially inside a lobotomized astromech, as far as that goes, I mean, I think the slapstick is where things kind of went a little bit toward the dumb, dumb, dumb side. But from the standpoint of just the premise, I think the premise worked, and it actually felt very familiar. I've been in the process right now for my timeline going through and researching the Old Republic MMO, watching all the class storyline cutscenes and that sort of thing, and I just finished reading The Old Republic Annihilation, and both of those, at different points, have missions where you have to find, or the main character has to find, essentially a cipher that would allow them to break enemy transmissions. So from the standpoint of Republic military operations and something that actually fits the use of the astromechs, I think it fit very well. But if you're going to do something with the droids, you know, you can either go serious and make people kind of shake their heads like, really, the droids are on a serious mission? Or you can go with the sort of slightly slapsticky, goofy thing and kind of diffuse some of the seriousness so that it can be taken less seriously and hopefully as it was intended.
This, I think, it did seem kind of familiar to me as well. Like, I don't know if I've just read a lot or maybe I've just seen so many Star Wars things and read so much, like, EU stuff that it did feel kind of familiar, but, like, I thought this was kind of pretty novel. I don't think we've seen anything quite like this before, like the small group infiltrating like a big ship. That's been done over and over again, but I kind of like this. I was actually really surprised that, I don't know why, but that the little frog guy came along. For some reason, I thought he was just going to be like the guy on the radio telling them what to do and yelling at them when they didn't do what he said. Like, the idea of him yanking out like half of the CPU of this droid and coming along inside it was kind of disturbing, but it was very unexpected to me. So they surprised me a little bit with this, but it's a similar trope. It's just with droids instead.
Now, in the briefing, we're told that these droids are uniquely suited for this mission, that they've all worked with Jedi before and been very useful and very resourceful. We are introduced to some new droids and a new character.
Well, we've got R2-D2, of course, there with Anakin. R2 is going to get those rocket upgrades that seem like they're going to fly in the face of some of the reasons why they say he doesn't use it later in the continuity, but I'm sure we'll get into that at some point with the upgrades and whatnot. We got QTKT, who is kind of based on R2KT, based on, of course, Katie Johnson, daughter of Alvin Johnson, the founder of the 501st. We've seen R2KT before. In this case, QTKT was a new droid. They took the R2 out, according to the featurette on StarWars.com, so that you wouldn't have them running around with two different characters being called R2 at different points in the episode. So QTKT, new droid, and there, apparently, with Ayla Secura, oddly enough, We have M5BZ, or BZ, who happens to be there with Terra Sanube, who we saw back in Lightsaber Lost, of all places. We have U9C4, the little yellow R5 type unit there. And he, of course, was there with our new Jedi character. This is an angst Jedi Knight named Thongla Jur, kind of a blink-and-you'll-miss-him type of character. Hopefully he shows up a little bit more later on. And, of course, we have the pit droid, or what we think of as a pit droid, who is WAC-47, and he's there with Clone Commander Neo. Neo's not a new character. He appears in Revenge of the Sith flying one of the speeder bikes, but he's new at least to the Clone Wars cartoon series, I believe. They show on StarWars.com that when you take his helmet off, he's actually designed to have his clone number as a tattoo on his face, which is kind of cool. And then, of course, we have our leader of the group, Frog Boy, Meeber Gascon, who's a colonel, and get it right, apparently. He is not just a new character, he is also a new species. He is a Zilkin, which is a species we know nothing about at this point, other than the fact that they are short and apparently frog-like. We will also get new characters a little bit later on, as we wind up getting Grubacher, Dr. Grubacher, who is a Parwan, and we also will see another of those super, what they call them, super tactical droids, Aut-O, later on. So it's an episode with a lot of new characters, albeit not a lot of new speaking role characters, if you don't count the beeps.
Colonel Meeber Gascon, an interesting character. When the episode was going on, he looked familiar to me, like I had seen him somewhere before, and I checked the StarWars.com, and then went back and looked at my episode one, the art of episode one, and he is actually a prototype for, or one of the design ideas for Jar Jar, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. Although, to me, the thing that screamed seeing him on screen, and I couldn't get it out of my head the entire night, was you got to kiss the girl. I was thinking Little Mermaid's frog. But, yeah, he's supposed to be based on the old character design there for Jar Jar that they scrapped.
And he's got an interesting way of dealing with the droids. He calls them soldiers, but at the same time, when he's talking to Dr. Grubacher, I can't even pronounce that.
Grubacher. Sounds very German, not only in his name, but also, did anybody catch, he seems like he almost has like an accent of German, like they're going for the Frankenstein kind of feel to the character.
I completely felt Frankenstein, especially when he was talking about, you know, removing the memory of the one droid and bringing him, he'll do that himself in the scrap room. I mean, if I was a droid, I'd be scared out of my mind. Or my memory banks, as the case may be. Colonel certainly deals with the droids in a novel way, and immediately kind of butts heads with Whack.
Yeah, I mean, I have to admit, my problems with the episode kind of start with Whack, because I know you have to have a character like that because, hey, the astromechs don't talk. Although, on a side note, I think they could have done this entire episode with just astromechs and been very clever with the visual storytelling and made a more powerful episode. But, you know, we're here to talk about the show we got, not about episodes we didn't get. I don't know. You know, there's a lot of things wrong with episode one, and pit droids are kind of at the top of the list, of course. You know, maybe in the top five, there's certainly other things. And I've never been a fan. And I guess fundamentally, I don't get we have a droid who's got programming of some variety, and let's give him things to do, but then he goes off and does his own things. And I guess fundamentally, to me, that just seems stupid. Like, why are these droids able to just say, oh, hey, don't worry, Corporal, or, you know, he's supposed to be saying Colonel, of course, but don't worry, Corporal, I put us on a collision course for the Dreadnought. And it's just like, even I'm thinking, that's just so stupid. Why would you have this guy on your team? It makes no sense.
I think it's one of those ones where you got to kind of just accept that sort of thing. I mean, why do we have the pit droids doing these stupid Three Stooges antics in episode one, aside from the fact that they thought it was going to be cute? You know, there's all the explanation we can use of, well, you know, they've been in service for so long, their memory hasn't been wiped, now they're developing all these different personality traits, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, it's just kind of one of those things you just kind of have to accept with droids in Star Wars, at least since Lucas really started delving back into it, even if you want to go back to the ass droid smacking the probe droid down for no apparent reason back in the special edition of A New Hope in 97. But I do like the fact that of the characters that we hear speaking in this episode, aside from the briefing, or at least of the Republic characters that we see, the two that actually speak Gascon and Wack, they both have something to prove, granted in different ways. But I think it's kind of interesting to see the interplay here where you have these characters who have to rely on each other for the mission, and you would expect that it'd be the, you know, the either the droid has nothing to prove and it's the droids that are doing things right and the bumbling soldier who's with them commanding them, or the other way around. The soldier's trying to do everything right and the droids keep bumbling. Instead, what we get is a few of the droids pretty much doing what they're supposed to do, but then with Wack and Gascon, we get two characters who are driven by this need to prove themselves to others, to earn respect. In that sense, I mean, I think I didn't like Wack until that point in the episode where they sort of reveal that Gascon was basically just a strategic map reader as opposed to someone who had seen frontline combat. And at that moment, it's like, oh, okay, there's our dichotomy there. There's the two trying to prove themselves who hopefully together will manage to help each other prove their worth.
I didn't always mind the interplay of the two. I thought it was kind of funny. And again, looking at our target audience, my 8-year-old and 6-year-old loved Wack. Thought he was hilarious. Just enjoyed everything about it. It does seem to have a kind of a different tone. And what I found myself wondering when they were infiltrating the Dreadnought is they've kind of done this before. Back in the Citadel trilogy, R2 commanded a bunch of battle droids to, you know, follow him as he was their commander, and they infiltrated that way. Why did they decide on astromech droids this time? What about having astromechs? Because they are the only ones that we've seen on the Separatist ships. I don't think, besides Goldie back in season one, we've ever seen a Separatist astromech, have we?
That's another thing that I didn't really like about the whole scheme, is that they were supposed to be so kind of nonchalant and very, you know, inconspicuous by being just a bunch of astromechs walking around. And, you know, Gascon even says at the end, oh, they would never expect to be betrayed by, their own kind, a droid. And I'm like, you, I think those things stick out like sore thumbs, especially when they're dragging a dead one. You know, let's carry him to the ship and just take off, because no one's going to notice that. I mean, Jonathan, you're right. And so I thought the exact same thing. They are so incredibly out of place. It makes no sense that they could have possibly gotten away with what they're trying to do.
But isn't that the point of the way that the droids are being perceived in a lot of Star Wars media, especially in the stuff that Lucas is putting forward? The idea that the droids are little more than just scenery. You know, they go about their duties like the mouse droids on the Death Star. You know, they go about their duties, and any of the higher order droids, so to speak, like say the battle droids, that you can argue about higher order there, any of the sentients on board, they're not going to pay a moment's notice to them unless they get in their way. Because, well, they're just droids. I mean, I don't go around and pay that much attention to what my toaster is doing for most of the day until the time comes.
Your toaster doesn't roll around the house dragging your microwave, though. Then okay, you would pay attention.
How about an automated swimming pool cleaner? Turn on that automated swimming pool cleaner. Or take me out to the front of the apartment complex. Unless I'm in the middle of the road about to get run over, how much attention am I paying to my neighbors driving back and forth in their vehicles? They are part of essentially the backdrop, the scenery, at least the way that Lucas in a lot of ways has approached them in the past. I'm not saying that it isn't out of place, so and that droids perhaps should be, you know, if they're on guard, should be noticing something like that. But from the standpoint of at least kind of thinking of this in the way that the creators of the series look at it, it makes perfect sense to say, well, they're droids, they're not going to be noticed. Not because they're not a different kind of droid. Of course they're a different kind of droid than we tend to see very much on there, but they're droids. Who cares? Who thinks about that sort of thing on the Separatist ship? It's kind of the perception that seems to be at work here.
I think this is kind of supposed to be the equivalent of, you know, dressing up like one of the maintenance people and sneaking in as part of, like, you know, the night shift. And I think it's supposed to be that we don't really see the, for lack of a better word, the more domestic side of the Separatist ships. They're all droid ships, and these battle droids are clearly not set up to be able to do maintenance functions and things like that. They have, like, a droid for every purpose, kind of like ranks or employment for, you know, a human situation. So I took it as that there probably are astromechs, we just don't see them, because we usually don't see the inner workings of Separatist, like, ships, installments, things like that. So I think it's supposed to be that they're just, invisible, like they're servants almost. They're not supposed to be something that pays attention, that people pay attention to, but we notice them sticking out like a sore thumb because, A, they're these brightly colored things that don't look like any of the other droids that we're seeing, and we're supposed to take notice. So I think it was clunky the way they did it. I think it would have been better if there had been other astromechs around just to give us that idea that they are fitting in and they're invisible because they're so, like, they're not important in the running of the higher parts of the ship hierarchy. But I think that's what they were trying for.
See, Jen, you just hit on something that is kind of what I'm talking about. I felt the show was really lazy in all the things that I'm pointing out. I mean, Nathan, I understand what you're saying, but I have to admit, I kind of feel like the other droids who are now suddenly on alert because the intruder alert, they know they're going to break in this secret little compartment that's holding this this chip, this key or what have you, there they should be noticing any little thing that's suspicious. But Jen, you hit it on the head. Something as simple as just a handful of other backdrop astromech droids, if the Separatists even use those. I guess why would you use astromechs when they're their own pilots and the droids themselves are vehicles? It just could have been, maybe I'm really, really criticizing execution more so here than the concepts.
When you think back to the original trilogy, the thing that kind of goes along with Nathan with what you said earlier, that these are sort of window dressing, I agree with that. But the beautiful thing when they infiltrated the Death Star in Episode 4 was there were other astromechs around. And there were other protocol-style droids around, so it wasn't out of the realm to see maybe a different astromech and protocol droid walking down the hall, because we saw them. And that's why this was just a little bit off. And as far as Jen maybe talking about we don't see them in the background, I think the battle droid platform, you know, going from Episode 1 on, we've seen that battle droid platform or that design being engineering droids, piloting droids, security droids, even firefighter droids. So I think that I would assume that in a effective cost measure that they would just retask those droids to serve a different purpose rather than bringing on a completely different type. Now, kind of moving on a little bit, we kind of jumped over it, but most of the droids got some type of performance upgrade before they moved on to begin their mission. Now, as we said, R2-D2 got his improved jet rockets. KT got a coil remote control magnet. U9-C4 got a laser cutter. And M5-BZ got the lobotomy, as Nathan put it. This, I mean, I know this is a typical trope. And please remember that I enjoyed this episode, but I thought it was like, okay, I wonder how they're going to use that this episode.
To me, it was just the question came back to, I mean, I know they were trying to do this very much the way that they did, say, Delta Squad in the Republic Commando video game, for instance, you know, where each team member has a specific specialty and they must work together to their strengths and whatnot. But I was sitting back thinking, you know, why can't each of them get all the upgrades? You know, at this point, the insides of an astromech are pretty much like the TARDIS in Doctor Who. It's bigger on the inside than on the outside because you can fit numerous lightsabers inside the heads, inside the bodies. I mean, certainly they had room for the upgrades. The other thing that had me scratching my head about the upgrades was R2-D2's rocket boosters. They have said that the reason we don't see him using those boosters in the classic trilogy era, because of course they didn't know he had them until Lucas put them in for Episode 2, was, well, you know, they're just out of warranty by that point, so he can't use them anymore. Now, that whole out of warranty based on the date of R2-D2 going into service has now shot all the heck, because now we have new boosters put in, unless they're going to assume that these boosters perhaps, you know, they burn out even faster than the previous ones, so they can still wind up running out of service by the time that we get to the classic trilogy era. I just thought it was kind of funny that they just wound up flummoxing their own continuity fix from something that Lucas had done in the past with something that Lucas is doing now in Filoni and company.
Well, I think they have an opportunity to have a better one, because I always took the warranty expiring as just sort of a joke, like, oh, well, you know, the warranty expired, whatever, quit asking stupid questions. I think they got a better opportunity to say, hey, the mission's over now. These are parts that we need for other droids on other missions. R2, come back to the shop. We're going to remove them entirely. And, well,
except that he has them in Revenge of the Sith.
Well, crap, that's right. He does use them on the Grievous' ship, doesn't he?
I mean, unless they say perhaps that now that the war itself is over, they'll take the parts and cannibalize it for, like, Imperial military droids or something. I mean, it could still work like that, but this episode wouldn't do anything to alter how they would have to approach it, though.
I was going
to
give this series some points if they went in and started answering little questions like that, but you're right. Episode 3, he has a little bit of a use of them, so. Ah, well, I was trying to help you out on that one, Dave.
But for what it's worth, I mean, he uses something similar from his feet, or whatever you want to call them, the rollers in Legacy, I believe, which is like 100-plus years in the future. So, yeah, they've got their work cut out.
Yeah, that's a freaking comic book. Who cares? We got to fix the movie problems first.
Ouch. Best Star Wars comic in ages and ouch.
Well, no. I wasn't belittling comics. I was making the comment around, like, everything in the movies matter, you know, to Lucas, and everything else is like, oh, well, that, you know, that wasn't part of my vision. So, you know, as long as he can fix things, movie and TV show is directly influenced by Lucas, that sort of thing. But no, sorry, didn't mean to make enemies with comic book fans there. I was being facetious from the Lucasian outlook of it.
Well, and I kind of found it amusing how each of the droids' upgrades had the yellow tape surrounding them, so you knew exactly what what had been changed on the droid. And the laser cutter on U9C4, I mean, God, man, R2 must have been, like, completely jealous of that.
And the little yellow things, the warnings, you could even be translated into actual words if they took it from the Aurebesh to the other. They put that on the slideshow on StarWars.com. I just kind of found it, you know, amusing the way that they set up all these different upgrades and such, and yet the droids, you know, like U9 or C4, with a name like that, wouldn't you have expected him to be like a walking explosive device or something? I mean, his name is C4, but they don't do it.
I was certain he was going to die because of that. I was like, his name is C4. He's doomed. He's going to explode somehow. And I was shocked. Like, when, especially towards the end when he's just raking the place with that laser. Like, I was certain he was doomed.
But I'm a gun die all over again, right?
So how does a droid, and I recognize I'm thinking way too much about this, but, you know, when the episode doesn't really trigger right with you, you kind of start thinking about these things more naturally. But how do you tell a droid that, hey, don't use that unless you lock yourself down? How does he forget to lock himself down? See, I have in my head that droids should be like, oh, I was just given an order to lock myself down before I use this device, and I will flawlessly do that from now on because it's just now part of my instructions.
The same way that Wack can't get Colonel and Corporal straight.
Exactly.
I mean, we have to accept that this is serving the point of the story. You either give it to him or you don't, and you move on. So why don't we talk a little bit about how the droids behaved on the Separatist dreadnought? What did you guys think of how they got their mission done?
I was pretty impressed by most of it. I mean, everything from R2 being able to fire his little suction cup thing that has a little device on the end and it's able to turn and operate the dials and whatnot, the improvisation messing around with the gravity and such. I mean, R2 allowing himself to fall down and decapitate Otto and such. From the standpoint of droids, most of the time we see them more bumbling or doing just basic tasks than anything else. Aside from the one quibble that I have as far as, wait a second, how was R2 able to stick his probe in the socket and make it work when the other one just got zapped? Pretty much all the rest of it, even with the bumbling, for the most part felt genuine. It felt like they were actually doing the job, not purposely, you know, playing the Three Stooges role and such, especially once they're actually in the room with that chip that somehow, by being held in beams, is able to influence Separatist transmissions all over the sector and such.
Yeah, that chip was a little odd for me, and it didn't seem like it was, you would think that chip being the, you know, the cipher would have to be easily replaced, and where it was, I don't think it would be too easily replaced.
Well, it was locked up like the, you know, the key to Vector Sigma on Cybertron.
That's what I was thinking too.
Were you really?
It really looked like
that's Vector totally what it made me think about. It's like, you know, it's like in this like extremely ridiculous stronghold to hold a Dakota ring.
It's an encryption chip. I would think it would be like in part of like, you know, a CPU somewhere. I was expecting them to just go and jack into some like wall panel and yank it out. Instead, it's like in this hovering. I was confused.
It should be in something doing something.
The other thing is you would think that when they take that, they're taking it. They're not copying it. They're not getting the data off it. Well, the droids wouldn't be like, oh, crap, they stole the key. We better switch.
You think it would only work if no one knew you did it.
Exactly. Exactly. But again, kid show.
But I'm not content with that answer because you could have gotten both. Just like the original Star Wars movie in 1977, I loved it as a 5-year-old. I love it as a 37-year-old. You could have done this episode, a plot where the droids go on a mission, and you could have made both groups happy because we love R2 because he's 1977 R2 freaking D2, and then the kids love him because they're cute. You could have done both.
I think it would have been easy, right, to just say they copied it and then put it back and got out of there without people realizing that it had been stolen. The super tactical droid, Otto, it goes in and sees what they're doing and makes R2 put his hands up, and that was rather amusing because who didn't do that with their R2-D2 have his legs?
That happened. You know, that was a callback to the original droids. We've seen that. He's in trouble again, if you know what I'm saying.
I think some people are trying to repress that, Jerry. But they knew what they were there for. They knew what they were after. Even though the super tactical droid was destroyed, he still was able to get the alarm out. They know what they were there for. Is this really going to be, you know, a successful mission?
Just makes you kind of wonder how much time it would take for them to retool a new cipher and get that sent out and to all the different ships that need the information to be able to break the code. I mean, if it really is just this one transmission from General Grievous that somehow they're able to see but not hear because it's scrambled as opposed to not being able to see it either, if it's just this one communication they need, if they can get it back fast enough, they could decipher that, use that against this major separatist offensive, and after that, look, if it works, it works. If not, at least they've done the one thing they wanted to do with it. I mean, if the premise really is what it sounded like at the beginning of the episode, not something like we're talking Wind Talkers here, where you want to break the code and do it just in a broad sense for the long term, then I think the mission still would count as a success. And I would argue that the whole idea of copying it, they could have copied it, that could have been part of the plan, but as soon as the tactical droid shows up, whether the mission was to copy it or to steal it, they still would have pretty much had to steal it because they had to get the heck out of there. They wouldn't necessarily have time to copy it. So in that sense, I'm not sure that's a plot hole so much as it would have been nice to have something like that mentioned maybe in the initial briefing as, you know, copy or steal. That way it kind of would feel like it was a little more consistent there.
See, and I interpreted it as they were trying to thwart this major offensive, and one transmission from Grievous, which they knew about the offensive because of that transmission, but I felt that maybe there were other things going on and they needed to sort of listen in on separatist communications so that they could, you know, counter the offensive. That was what I took it from.
The opening crawl, the opening newsreel, had said that they've received or they've intercepted an encoded transmission from General Grievous. However, Republic intelligence officers have failed to crack the new encryption code being used by the droids. Fear escalates that the separatists are about to mount a major offensive. So they've got the transmission. They know it's from Grievous. They haven't been able to crack it, so they don't know that there's another major offensive coming, but they're expecting it based on the fact that there was a transmission of this, you know, magnitude or whatever, that was this widespread, or however it is they're looking at this, to do so. So it does seem as though they need it to crack this specific code.
So they can't crack this specific code, but they know where a dreadnought is, and they know where on the dreadnought they keep the magic key. Okay.
Absolutely. Wait.
Before, you know, we're jumping all over the place, but before they move into the room where they have the key, Whack and Meeber Gascon have their little head-to-head where basically Whack challenges him, kind of just throws down and says, well, listen, if you expect us to do what you want to do, you're not going to call us names anymore or it isn't going to happen. That's pretty ballsy for a droid.
It was a good moment story-wise and some character developments. Like, hey, you treat us poorly and you're probably displacing some frustration because you're probably used to being treated that way too because you're 6 inches tall and you're a map reader. I mean, you know, this poor little guy even had little droids laughing at him, which, on the flip side, how does a droid even, like, muster up in the programming this level of insubordination and say, oh, no, hey, we're not going to follow your orders and do you treat us with respect. I mean, it was just dumb.
Back to Jerry's default setting for this episode.
I think they put Whack in there just in general, not just this part, but like just to have a voice for the droids. I think that's the only reason he was really there. But he was so snarky and so obnoxious. I think if they had toned him down just a little bit, he wouldn't have grated on everybody's nerves quite so much, and he would have served an actual functional purpose where he could speak in a language that the viewers could understand and kind of be the voice of the droid group. But they just made him so annoying. I think that's why nobody's really able to get behind him at all.
Jen, I think you have a real point there. Whack really was jarring, and I find myself thinking that if he had been maybe not as abrasive or wacky the first part of the episode until Easy gets damaged or is deactivated, dies, what have you. And if that had been the catalyst for the droids to kind of like, wait a minute, this individual, this colonel is not, doesn't care about us and doesn't care what happens to us, and yet he expects us to take these risks and do these things, you know, so that he can be promoted. And this is something that he very much saw as a way to his promotion. I mean, he describes he wants to get back in time because he thinks that if he succeeds in this mission, he'll be promoted to Brigadier General. I think then if the droids had kind of staged a little mini revolt or a work shutdown or what have you, would have been a little bit stronger a message. What do you guys think?
I'll be honest with you, I don't know where to start with, you know, trying to make this make sense. I mean, you know, I know we're used to in the Star Wars universe hearing C-3PO, for instance, always feeling like, you know, like he's visibly annoyed or comes out and says that, hey, we're being treated poorly, or hey, you know, I'm trying to think of the phrase that he uses when talking to
he goes, it's our lot in life to suffer, episode 4.
Yes. You know, that's a really good one. That's not the one that I was thinking of. And maybe I'm pulling this out of some EU source, like a radio drama or something, where he says, I'm afraid that space travel for us is a little bit more than just humans barking ass and giving us orders. In fact, I think that was from the radio drama.
It was.
Yeah.
But I think you have a point. 3PO was always the voice of the droid, and, you know, how they are relegated to being second-class citizens, which, okay, they're droids, I get it, but that there was always that sort of, you got the sense of the underlying resentment from him, but never from R2. R2 always just said, or acted as if he had a job to do, he was going to do it, and that was it. And if he got damaged in the process, then so be it.
Which is, I guess, what we see a little bit, because I didn't really get from the rest of the astromechs that they were sitting back and just glad that Whack was championing their cause. I mean, I think Whack even kind of gets on the soapbox and leans up against KT, and KT actually, like, scoots away from him. Like, dude, don't associate yourself with me now. You're the one going to get deactivated for all this.
So Colonel Gascon was an interesting character to have in this role.
There's a little debate here, you know, map reader versus military strategist. I actually thought that's kind of a stretch. Like, you know, military strategists and Mace Windu spoke well of them. That's kind of important, actually.
I think the episode actually could have gone on without him in it. I think it would have been interesting to have, like, no dialogue between the droids other than beeps and tweets. And that would have just been really interesting.
It's like the G.I. Joe comic that's so famous where there's no words because it's Snake Eyes, you know, and, you know, everything, there's volume said without a single word. I don't think this could have been that powerful, but could you imagine this, just those four droids, just the astromechs just going in by themselves? That would have been slick.
That would have been awesome.
Well, what purpose does Gascon serve here other than to be kind of the, I mean, he doesn't do anything. He sits there and he complains, and then he jumps on the super tactical droid's head a little bit. But essentially, other than ordering droids around to do what they could have done anyway, I mean, it wasn't like he did any sort of last-minute tactical thinking. He just was along for the ride, and the droids did what they did. And even Whack distracted the super battle droids. And how dumb must they be to go, here, get in the closet so I can do what I need to do. Okay.
Speak with authority, and they will follow. I think it depends on, like, whether he was necessary depends on what you think they were trying to do with this episode. Were they essentially trying to tell a Standard Wars story in the context of the Clone Wars in general? Or were they essentially trying to do what they often do with some of the episodes earlier on, which is essentially almost trying to do like a Star Wars fable, where they try to take Star Wars content and characters and whatnot and provide a lesson? That opening fortune cookie that seemed to go over the heads of much of the younger audience pretty much seems to me to nail down the idea that this one was designed with the idea of, we are going to have a moral to this story. This will be essentially a fable. And in that sense, he's that necessary link. You know, he needs to be the one to recognize that, you know, while he may be respected for his role in the Battle of Geonosis as a strategist, while he may have Mace Windu's respect, and these are just droids he's commanding, so he is certainly sentient and in that sense superior to them, that he does need them. That humility being the way to avoid humiliation, if he is going to do well in this mission, if he's going to be able to earn respect as opposed to just having it given because of who he is, it must be through, in this case, in his case, getting the respect essentially of the what he thinks of as the lowest of the low, those who aren't even sentient, the droids. In that sense, it makes perfect sense to have this character, and it wouldn't have made sense not to have someone like him in the story, even if it was maybe another droid that had that sort of a issue going on. Maybe, you know, a droid that was a veteran of the different starfighter battles and now is in the middle of this and all haughty. Or maybe even having R2-D2 be the one that all of a sudden has some kind of arrogance issue. But if that's the case, if it's a fable, you can't remove that type of character. Otherwise, the moral that their fortune cookie seems to be pushing disappears.
I completely can go with that, Nathan. And as a fable, it does have that purpose, and Gascon has that meaning in it. But I still feel that there was a bit of a disconnect between the message that they were trying to present here and the way that they did it with the characters here. I think that maybe it would have been better not to do it with droids, because I think that's where it lost some of its message for me. If he had done it maybe with with clones, for instance, that you had this sort of underappreciated colonel who had to work with the clones, and the clones are looking at him like, you know, forget it, you're a frog, and we don't want to listen to you, and he's treating him like that. I think it would have been, especially given everything that this series has tried to tell us about the plight or the lot in life of the clones.
But haven't we already seen that to a degree? I mean, them looking down at, for instance, any kind of contributions that, you know, R2-D2 and C-3PO could have made and such, the initial doubts in even the Clone Wars movie, where as Ahsoka's putting forth her first opinions, they're talking about how they value experience over rank necessarily. It seems like it would have felt much more like, yeah, we've kind of been there, done that, if they had gone with clones. You know, the droids at least provide an unusual vector for this type of thing. You don't usually expect the idea of respect from or for droids.
They've never really ironed out whether any droids beyond R2 and maybe 3PO are, for lack of a better word, like sentient, where they're self-aware and they have their own personality. So I'm wondering if this was kind of an attempt to, like Nathan was saying, like a fable, kind of don't judge people by what they look like. They look like a robot, but they may have, you know, a personality and thoughts and, you know, desire to stay alive and things like that. Just like people. I never really thought of the droids as walking toasters. I just kind of pictured them as other characters. So I don't know if maybe I'm looking into it too much, but that's kind of what I got from it.
Through the use of R2-D2 and C-3PO, this is what the Star Wars saga has always told us, though, that these droids are contributing members and characters in their own rights, and they have feelings and thoughts and ideas. I never really kind of saw them as those type of characters as automatons. I always felt that droids had their own personality, and we have seen that in other droids before, even as recently as the last arc with the Jedi training droid, or Cad Bane's droid in this series. There have been lots of other opportunities or other situations where we have seen sentient types droids.
You know, I think you have a really good comparison there, and I thought a little bit about this too, that WAC and Toto 360, at least in the first time we saw Toto, I think those droids are very similar in personality. But, you know, it's kind of interesting. Star Wars, I guess, with droids has come a long way, I guess, beyond the movies, but the original Star Wars movies always made you feel like that there was something magical and mystical or something about 3PO and R2-D2, because they were like droids with some level of intelligence. Like, they were almost you know, like they always had little force powers of their own, you know, at least in terms of just being able to interact with the world. And then all the other droids in Star Wars were just like machines. R5-D4 was like, oh, he just goes out a little bit and blows up. Just, okay, scoot him away, he's fine. The little mouse droids, all the little droids that Jawas had, even the droids on Jabba's palace, they were just all like, I'm here to perform my one function, I'm going to perform my one function. And it always seemed like R2 and 3PO were standouts, but they're the exception to the rule, and then I expect every other droid, though, to just be a functioning machine. It's weird, and I guess part of that is what led me to some of the reactions I have to this show. It's like, no, this whack guy has way too much personality. It should be R2-D2 who's the one who's, like, showing all these other astromechs how they can be important and valuable.
So you're saying R5-D4 wasn't really Skippy the Jedi droid?
He's definitely not Skippy the Jedi, yeah. Definitely not Skippy the Jedi droid.
To give them the chance now.
I know that story very well, and I find it hilarious, but yeah. To where he self-destructed so that R2 could go forward and be the leader of the rebellion that he needs to be.
All right, well, this episode ends with the droids and Colonel Gascon leaving the ship, and I have to say that I kind of thought that they completed their mission rather quickly. I figured, knowing that this was a four-part arc, that maybe it would take a little bit more time to steal the chip. But we go into next week's episode, A Sunny Day in the Void. And Jerry, you and I have seen a bit of this episode, and I think probably the catalyst for the episode is what we've seen. And I will share that it is a very visually appealing episode. It looks really good. Well, where do you guys think this is going to go?
Personally, I'm just interested in seeing the artistic style for next week, because they talk about how it was influenced so much by the artist Jean Garon, I think is how you pronounce it, Mobius. And I've seen some of his still art. I'm kind of curious how they would develop it for here. I mean, I know that we saw influences of it in things like Willow. We saw influences of it even with the probe droid design back in The Empire Strikes Back. But to see a whole episode influenced by that should be pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, to me, I kind of, like you said, Jonathan, I have a little bit of an idea of what next week's going to be like. But I will overlook or forgive some of these things if we do actually get a little bit more of a true payoff beyond just the droids and kind of what they do with this key or this chip or whatever it was called, and leads to, you know, a pretty cool Clone Wars type battle at the end of the, you know, really bringing the closure of why this mission was important more so than just a little side mission that really doesn't impact anything. So this is really going to be four episodes in the story. I hope it takes us there versus four episodes of the droids just getting back with the key.
I didn't actually get to see the preview for next week, but I had a feeling at first. I was afraid that we would not see the droids at all and that the key would just get taken away and it would be just Obi-Wan and fighting General Grievous and things like that. So I'm kind of excited to hear that that's not the case.
And then after next week, I think the Clone Wars goes on hiatus for a little time till after the first of the year. All right. Well, thank you all for your input on this episode. I like you, I'm looking forward to seeing where it goes. But we will get to it next week when we review A Sunny Day in the Void. Thank you, everyone.
Hey, thanks, Jonathan.
Thanks. See you next time.
Thank you. Catch you next time.
Thank you for listening to Republic Forces Radio Network. Remember, we want your thoughts on the next episode of the Clone Wars series. You can leave us a voicemail at 415-508-JEDI every week from the time the new episode airs, and voicemails received by 1 a.m. Sunday morning may be included in our next episode. You can find our reviews of previous Clone Wars episodes, as well as our summer series reviewing the classic droid cartoon series, at our website, www.republicforces.com. And be sure to listen to our other Star Wars podcast, Star Wars Action News, covering all aspects of Star Wars collecting, from figures to high-end collectibles to Star Wars Band-Aids. Republic Forces Radio Network is hosted by Jerry, Arnie, Dan, Jen, Berent, and Nathan P. Butler of StarWarsFanWorks.com. Republic Forces Radio Network, RepublicForces.com, and Star Wars Action News are not affiliated with Lucasfilm or any other official Star Wars-related company. Star Wars, and all of the Star Wars universe contains are copyright and trademarked Lucasfilm Limited, and no infringement is intended. Republic Forces Radio Network is a Venganza Media production. Copyright 2012. All rights reserved.